Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Now, as you hunt today, like, who are your, you know, so one of the things you said is it's easier, you know, when you're wore down at the end of the season and you're like a happy man because you're ready to be home. It's a lot easier to do that with a couple bucks, you know, at the taxidermist, yeah. Right? If you hadn't killed anything on all these trips for all these miles for all these, you know, hours not slept, it would be really difficult to hang it up. But from all that success and everything, like, who are your hunting influences now? Like, what style of hunting do you gravitate towards, like, in that more calculated approach?
Well, I see the benefits to a more calculated approach. Like, you know, I look at someone like Jake Bush, right? He's the most calculated hunter I know. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. Now, I see the advantages to it, but I could never do it. It's not my style. It just wouldn't work for me. But a lot of these, like, you know, the whole, you know, you got your lone wolf crew, right? I mean, they're very calculated people. I don't entirely know this, but I believe Andy May to be a very calculated hunter, right? Like, he gets his intel, he does his meticulous scouting, he knows when he has to be there, he goes in and he kills. And I think that all those guys are just phenomenal hunters, right? But it's just not my style. It's not, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at running cameras. I suck at cameras. I've got cameras all around the state. I have no idea where they are. You know, I don't know where they are. I don't really care. And it's just not my style. And I've tried it. I tried it this year a little bit in Indiana, had 8 cameras stolen. And I'm like, yep, I see, this just is not for me. You know, all that work going to set cameras, you know, just for nothing. But the scrambling and the running around and the figuring it out on the fly, I mean, it's exciting. And this year I did a lot of permission stuff and it was awesome. It added a whole new level of entertainment to the ordeal, you know, because you're meeting people, and I really enjoy that. I met some of the best people I've ever met in my life just asking for hunting permission. I mean, it was cool. It was a cool experience. And that was a goal I had at the beginning of the year, because it's so uncomfortable, right? Asking for permission is uncomfortable. And I said, you know what, Alex, this year you're going to knock on doors, whether you like it or not, because you got to be where the deer are. You know, for years I looked at public properties within the boundaries, right? And that's just not the best way to do it. You got to look at properties without boundaries, because you got to be where the deer are. And if you're not, you're wasting your time. So, and that ended up being, I mean, the two bucks that I killed were both on permission properties adjacent to public, because we knew the deer were on the private. So it's just, that was a huge learning experience, but it was fun. It was fun. It's like, it used to be, oh, we got to go find a new spot. And this year it was like, oh, that deer we want to kill is right there. We just got to get right there. And it was just a whole new element to it. And it was a lot of fun.
So talk to me about that process, because I've never done that. And you know, when I went to Kansas, one of the guys that he was hunting the same unit as me, but they've been going there. Tim from Adjustable Red Dot. I don't know if you've met him. Great guy. Yep. He's from the area here, but he's got a couple houses out in Kansas, and he just kept telling me, he's like, you know, you should probably just knock on some doors. And I was like, I don't know about that. And yeah. So, you know, I didn't have to do that. I had a plan though. I had a plan for trying to like work my way into like any sort of permission piece. But what was your like tactic? Cause I mean, I guess my thoughts, and I guess probably most of the listeners would think the same thing, is that if people are hunting the public the same as you are, that guy must get asked every day by every hunter who sees that buck across that property line. So what's going through your head, and how are you approaching like that type of situation, or those situations that you found yourself in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say to that is he hasn't been asked by you, right? I mean, there is something to human connection, or whatever you want to say, right? Like there are certain people that you like, there are certain people that you meet and like, and there are certain people you meet and don't like. And I believe that's, you establish that when the first word comes out of their mouth. You might even establish that when you see them walking down the driveway. So I don't think it hurts to ask. But I also, what really helped me is I put myself in their shoes. Like if I owned thousands, some of these people own thousands of acres. They really do. In fact, one of the, in Nebraska, we killed on this little tiny piece. It was nothing but a field. The landowner had no idea it existed. No, he didn't even remember it existed, right? Because he's leasing it out to farmers and he just gets his check. So it was nothing to him. And, you know, this is different in different places. But I put myself in their shoes. If I owned all this land and a hunter came up and asked me for hunting permission, I wouldn't be pissed off that he asked me. You know, I wouldn't let him, because maybe I want to hunt or my son, but I sure as hell wouldn't be pissed off that he came to ask me. You know, I'd be like, I got respect for this guy. You know, at least he didn't trespass. In fact, I asked permission on probably, I knocked on probably 50 doors at least this year. The only no's that I got were because a son or a grandson were hunting the property. And probably half of those people thanked me for being polite and actually asking permission. In other words, they're used to people just helping themselves. And so, you know, obviously you're going to run into different people, but I had a really positive experience, and I would highly recommend, you know, if you're in a situation where you know that deer that you're trying to kill, because we had eyes on the deer, right? And so we knew what was going on. And if you're in that situation, for me, it's going to be a immediate next step. Like, I'm not going to waste time trying to kill him on the public when I know he's on the private, you know? So
do you think that, I mean, obviously in states like, you know, farming states, right? So
yeah,
Nebraska, I'm sure Kansas is the same way, because I listened to one of the other podcasts, and they were talking about getting permission and how it was kind of difficult for exactly what you had outlined there, where, you know, in some of the sections where I was driving around and like where the walk-in was and stuff. I mean, these roads are, that's a very loose term. It's more like a tractor path and it's all these like section lines, and there might be an old rundown house there that no one lives in, but
yeah,
whoever owns it might be, you know, 40 miles yeah. away, 50 miles away. So tracking down that person, or, you know, you can knock on a door and they say, well, I don't own that. You know, he lives yep. two counties over or whatever. So it's different in somewhere like that. Now, would you take the same approach here in Michigan, stuffing, you know, all of those letters in the mailboxes and getting zero replies? Like, would you still say that that was a viable option here?
I don't think you're going to get a response if you put a letter in someone's mailbox. I think you gotta knock on the door with some puppy dog eyes, you know? I mean, and I think, you know, the other thing was, is like, I was brutally honest with these people. Like, I was not beating around the bush. I literally told them, look, there's a buck I really want to kill. I saw him over there. I'm trying to hunt the public, but he's over there. And the only way I'm going to kill him is if I can hunt your property. I didn't word it like that, right? But I was very, very upfront and blunt. And I think to a certain extent, it may have caught some people off guard, like the brutal honesty of the situation. You know what I mean? And so I don't know. I'm not saying it'll work every time, but it certainly doesn't hurt to ask. And we did this. So this is across four different states this year that this permission thing was a thing. And it just, I don't know, like it just worked out for us. So we were lucky, I guess.
So one thing I'm going to tie in two questions here that I have is, you know, you said you walk up there with your puppy dog eyes and that, interaction starts from the second maybe that you walk up the driveway.
Yeah.
And I could just hear some of these people saying, you see that boy, Joan? He's got his socks tucked into his pants. His pants tucked into his socks. Like, he must have something wrong with him. So where yeah. does that come from? Like, what? Why are your socks always, your pants always tucked into your socks?
Dude, that's from my dad. Dude, that's for my dad. But now that you say that, maybe that's why I'm getting yeses. They think I got a problem. Hey, whatever works. I can talk about the socks, okay? Because I know a lot of people have questions. Like, so when I was a kid, I was always taught to tuck my socks in walking around in the woods, just to keep ticks out and whatever. But also, I was a huge river fisherman, right? So in your waders, you always tuck your socks in or your pants into your socks so that your pants don't ride up in your waders. That's never left. Like, my ankles don't feel right if my socks are not tucked in. And so that's what that's about. I know it's weird, but it is what it is.
But so like now, you know, we could transition very easily into like that becoming a personality thing, like careful what you wish for. Right. So did you ever think that the sock thing would become a thing? Like people are like, oh man, pants tucked, like it's serious now.
No, I never thought anything of it, but you know, whatever, what can you do? I mean, I think that in the beginning you were talking about how, like, you know, we feel it's important that we don't outsource the personality behind the brand. And I still believe that to this day. I believe it more today than I did when we first had that conversation. And it's just because the brand is an extension of us. I mean, we poured everything, our whole lives is poured into this. It really is. And to outsource that and expect the, I guess the message that we want to get across to actually come across is an impossible thing. It really is. But it's also, you know, building relationships with our customers. Like, we want everyone to know who we are. Like, I want people to know who they're buying from. Like, we're not some, like, you know, hidden people just trying to make some money. Like, this is what we love to do. And that's important to me. And that's why we're doing this. And Jake and Kev, I think, might think I'm a little crazy at this point, but they're still letting me do it. So, I won't complain.
Now, how do you choose, like, so what states did you hunt this year? And like, how did you choose? Why did you choose them, et cetera?
So we hunted Nebraska, Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan. I think that's it. We chose them. So I have this like dream in my head where at some point I can kill in five states in 1 year. That's like my dream. And it's like the ultimate scramble, right? Like you barely have enough time to even hunt five states, you know, prime in a really productive time of the year. So I believe that over time, right, even when we go and we're unsuccessful, we're accumulating knowledge as we go. Every year we go, every year we do this, we have better encounters and we have more encounters. And it's only a matter of time before those stack up. At least that's what I keep telling myself, right? And so why did we pick those states? Because we randomly chose those to hunt at some point. So we have some history in those states going. We have momentum going, I guess, is one way to put it. Michigan's an obvious one, but at some point you got to make a decision. And it's also about aligning the seasons, the gun seasons, right? So Indiana comes in the 12th, right? But Ohio comes in, whatever date it is, the 25th, 20, whatever, end of the month. So like those two work together pretty well. And then you got Wisconsin that ends up being in the middle. So you can kind of stagger those out. So those states align from a season perspective. At least that's our theory on it right now. So we'll see if that ever happens, but that's really how we chose them, just because we have some history, we have some momentum going, or at least we think we do. And we're just running with it. Proximity to home too.
So from that standpoint though, it seems like if that were the case, like A, you could either like take the, I don't want to call it an easy road, because we talked the whole time prior to this hitting record here about how difficult it is to kill a deer, right?
Yeah. Sometimes.
And, yeah. You could just kill the first thing that walked by and say, I just want to hit my five deer slam, right? Or, you chose states where, good or bad, with the outside of Nebraska, but I don't think it's too far off. Like all the ruts kind of line up, where if you were to add a state like Alabama or Florida or somewhere down south where they get a different rut every week, you could just bounce around the state. It might change things up a little bit. And that kind of gets into the question, so I posed the question to a bunch of the listeners of like, what do they want to talk to you about? Like, what questions do they have for you? And like, one of them was like, what's your favorite time of year to hunt and like what terrain? Like, so if you said, okay, Alex, like Jake and Kev had an intervention, all their wives sat down with you and, you guys were what happened with the sticks, right? You were sitting Indian style in the backyard and they said, you know what, Alex, this isn't working. You can only hunt. You're going to get 10 days and you can only hunt one state. Like what terrain are you picking? What time of year and why?
I'd be in the hills. I'd be in the hills 100%. And I'd be there around Halloween into the first week of November, 100%. Ideally, so if you gave me 10 days, I'd probably want to be there from October 26th through November 4th, 5th. That would be my favorite time, most enjoyable time.
I think that's terrible. Why would you choose that? And I say that because like the last year, that's when we first went to Ohio. I was like, man, I was drinking the Jake Bush Kool-Aid. I was like, I know the area. Like I've killed down there. Like I've seen tons of bucks. Like that was always the time frame that we went, and we just got our teeth kicked in. Like, I mean, Eric, my buddy Eric, who's a freaking stone cold killer, didn't even see a deer. You know, and I could have killed some small bucks, and I had that really big one, you know, in there after dark. And, but I mean, we just got like manhandled down there. And so, like, what is it about the hills? Like, in, is your style like the Jake Bush style where you want to be like down in the hubs and you're just hunting the scrape and all that stuff? Or like, what's your style? How are you setting up in these places?
Well, you gave me 1 week, right? So that week, I choose that week, not because that's the best week to kill a big buck. I choose that week because it's the most beautiful time to be in the woods. And in the hills, there's nothing like a sunrise in the hills when the leaves are on fire. I mean, it is gorgeous. This the deer we shot in Wisconsin was on October 30th, and I swear to you, we were hunting in red. It was like orange light. It was just an incredible scene. And so that's a big part of my answer. Like, I'm kind of I wouldn't say a hippie, but like, I'm out there because I love being in the woods. I really am. Now, I also think it's a good time to kill big bucks, though. I really do. And I think it does depend on where you are. Ohio is very different than Wisconsin. Very different timing-wise. So in Wisconsin, during that time, it's nuts. I mean, I missed, in a 3-day window, I missed 3 bucks in Wisconsin before I shot that buck. I mean, it's crazy. So it is a little dependent on that. I am thinking about that area. I don't want to like give the area away. It's a very small area, very limited property, but
I'll put a pin in the show notes. I've been there.
Just, yeah, I'll let you do that. So, but it's just, anyway, a big part of that my answer is just, it's a gorgeous time to be in the woods, and I love it. So if I had 1 week, that's when it would be.
And so like, what is your, so for that 10 days, okay, this is one of the things for guys that travel or guys that are going on their trips. And one of the things I remember us talking about previously, and we were texting about it when I was going to Kansas, because it was, you know, as far as like the hunting party was me. I ended up staying with some guys that I had met from Michigan, and but wasn't like, we did not go out there together and scout and do all the stuff. It was more of a solo kind of hunt. And I've talked to guys that it's really, they get really discouraged really quickly. And I was in my mind trying to like curb all of that, just saying, okay, well, I got lots of time. I want to prioritize my time. I want to, you know, not put all my eggs in one basket, and, you know, I want to kind of see what the deer are doing and all of that stuff. So for that 10 days, like, how are you, like, what are you focusing on in the hills? How are you prioritizing your time? You know, because, you know, some of these guys, they want to go glass. Everybody who's, you know, successful, it sounds like, you know, I got to drive around. I got to check every single parking area. I got to do everything. You know, how are you prioritizing that time? And then I guess after this year and like your success knocking on doors, like, how does that change, you know, does that change how you look at that time now?
Yeah. So I admittedly, I struggle with that bit because I'm so excited to get in the tree. The driving around scouting part of the trip is very difficult for me. And I feel like I'm missing an opportunity. With that being said, all these people that talk about driving around, now I don't check parking lots, like that makes no difference to me, but finding deer, just deer, just find a deer, that's like step. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I've made that mistake a million times. You got to find deer. So however you want to do that, whether it's walking around to bump something, if you're after October 25th, I would argue that a good strategy is just to walk around until you bump something, bump a doe, just bump a buck. They're going to come back. Like, you know, I've always been skeptical of that, just the way I was raised as a hunter. Like, oh, you got to be super careful. Like, they don't care. They will come back. And so you got to find deer. Like, that's definitely step one. And then, man, from there, you could go a million different directions. I mean, there's just a lot of different variables. I think the key to the whole thing, though, is you kind of touched on this, is staying positive. Like, on these trips, it's added stress because you have a limited time and there's a ticking time clock, right? And so it's very difficult to stay positive. And I think if there's anything that really my best, I'm not the best hunter, but I am extremely positive. Every sit, I have the mindset that I'm crossing things off the list. And if it's not for this trip, it's for the trip next year. So I think that is like a crucial skill to hone in. If you're going to do this flying around the scramble thing, because look, you're going to have bad hunts if you're doing it this way. If you don't have information in the area you're going to have bad hunts because there's just too many variables. They're wild animals and they don't do the same shit every time. They don't. It's just, they're random. And so I think finding deer and staying positive are the two things that, like, I would focus on more than anything else. Just make sure you're getting up in the morning, you know, because it's so easy to sleep in.
So there's a phenomenon that I've experienced multiple times, and I don't know if you get the same like bad mindset or whatever, but it's like going into that like last day or like the day before the last day, like we got to go home tomorrow or we got to leave by this certain time. I feel like there's two kinds of people that they're like, I'm going to get super aggressive and I'm going to go in and I'm going to kill.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Whatever. I'm going to kill right now. Or there's guys, and I've found myself in this position. I mean, you could kind of argue that it happened to me. What would have been yesterday morning? But like that last morning, last sit, last night, I mean, I stalked in on that buck on, and like, I found a reason not to shoot that deer when I was in Idaho. Cause we were 7 miles from the truck, but it was like, you know, we got to go home tomorrow. I don't want to be chasing this deer through, you know, or saying like, well, I got to go home tomorrow. And if I shoot something, then it's going to push us back. So I'm just not going to hunt, or I'm just going to give up the last two sits or whatever. Like, have you experienced that? And like, how do you curb that? Or what side of the fence do you fall on?
I guess I'm definitely not on the side where it's like, I'm going to go in and kill anything. Like, I'm okay leaving empty handed. If that answers your question. I mean, again, it's just because I have this like crazy dream, right? That someday I'm going to have enough time spent that I'm going to be able to fly around and all the stars are going to align and I'm going to have this like crazy season. And I think that I've like formulated this in my head just to keep myself positive because it's so easy to get down. I mean, we had, I mean, just failure after failure. Hunting is failure. It's just failure over and over and over again. And then eventually it happens. But that's the amazing thing about it, right? Like, you can be having the worst time in the woods you've ever had. And then in an instant, it's just totally different. It just totally changes. And I think, I don't know. I think that mindset is really important. And I think that the really good, consistent hunters have that, because you get burnt out. I see it all the time. I see it with our group all the time. Right. And so I don't know. It's, so to answer your question, like, I'm okay if I don't shoot something, as long as I learn something.
But I think there, but what I'm talking about, I think more is like where I fall in is like, you're at that, like it's almost like the morning before you leave, you're like, man, cause if, you know, if I shoot something tonight, then I'm, you know, if I got to track it tomorrow and then like the next morning, it's like, well, you know, if I shoot something, then it's going to push us way back and we're going to have to figure out, you know, and the positive guy in me, like what I would tell other people, is that like, those are good problems to have, right? Like, you know, now you got to scramble to get this deer processed, yeah, or whatever, you know, pushes you back. But that's like, that's why you're there. You know, that's why you took the time. That's why all that, yeah, stuff is there. But I think a lot of guys, and especially like on a solo type deal where, you know, it's like, yeah, it's just me, or like, I don't know, guy, especially, you know, and I think we're in a different, I don't want to say like echelon, but we have like a crazy support system. Like if
yeah,
you could text anybody, and you could text Andy May or Jake Bush or whoever and be like, what do you think about this? You know, and get a response, yeah, back, you know, where, you know, somebody might, you know, just be trying this for the first time on their own. And I think that maybe plays in a little bit to it too. Right.
For sure. I mean, I guess had the like last day thing, it's just, that's a cumbersome logistical issue. And my whole life is a logistical issue. So like, I don't even think about that. Like, you know, it's like, oh, hey, well, yes, we'll figure out how to deal with this now. You know, I guess I'm probably not the right guy to ask that question to. I mean, so
man,
that's not the best answer.
So why do you focus on the hills? Like what is it that you love about the hills, other than the, you know, we'll remove the hippie, really enjoy the serene, yeah, beauty of the rolling hills. But why, for deer hunting, what draws you to the hills?
It's absurdly complicated. Like, every time I go to the hills, my mind is blown over and over and over again. I mean, I've seen, at this point, I've seen the wind do things that I didn't even think was possible. I mean, I have totally blown out so much, so many acres of property hunting. It's amazing to me. And it's like, you can never figure it out. Every day is different. This year I got frustrated, and I didn't get frustrated, but I'm like, this isn't working, right? Like, looking at the wind the night before and going in and getting in there, making sure access is good for that wind and setting up. It screwed me so many times that I just stopped doing that. And I said, we're just going to start walking and we're going to see where we end up based on the wind. Because like, we had to, you have to find these little nooks and crannies where it works. It's just fascinating to me because it is so complicated. You could scout it your whole life. You know, they talk about wind mapping and stuff. Like, that's bullshit. Like, every day is different. Okay. You got different pressures. You got different UV levels, right? Like, all of that stuff is affecting things, and it's impossible to get a handle on. So I think I'm just, it's like an impossible thing to figure out. And it's just addicting because it's always different every time you do it.
So what I'm hearing you say kind of is kind of like the way I feel about, you know, not having trail cameras or going into a new spot. And like, when it works, like, it's like the,
yeah,
it's like that.
Yes.
you just, it's almost like you're in disbelief. Like,
yes,
I was right. I was right. Finally, I was right. You know,
that's exactly the feeling, Adam. It's like, it's a feeling of such shock. Like, we shot that deer in Nebraska this year and like, man, we fucked that deer. Like, and it was all, he was so screwed. And it's just like, and it was awesome. Like, it was so calculated. I loved every second of it, but I wasn't surprised. Like, he was screwed. And it's just a different terrain. And in the hills, like, when something works, you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I can't believe that actually worked. You know?
And, you know, I don't know if I said it on the last podcast or not, but like that deer that I killed in Kansas, like, I think I did say it, but you know, it goes right along with this is like, you know, Frank and I were talking and he's like, you know, one time out of 1,000, does that scenario work? And it just in my head, like it turned around and I was like, well, I think you have to be in there and mess up those other 999 times for it to be there when it does work. Because if you're not putting in the effort and you're not failing, you're not learning, but you're also never going to put yourself in a position to win. And I think, you know, that to me is like when you can make that go from, you know, 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 100 or 1 in 50, yes. you know, that's where you're learning. And I think that's where, you know, we are so indoctrinated to think that everybody on social media is the greatest hunter in the world. And, you know, it's really funny. I think you do like a really good job with your hunt breakdowns and stuff like that. And saying like, okay, this is what I was thinking. This is how this worked. But like, sometimes I think that, and this is no knock against you, cause I think they're really good. And I think, you know, the hunting public do it also. But it's like really easy when it works to be like, oh yeah, the deer did this and this is what I thought. And like, but like, if you had a hunt breakdown of every other time that the wind, you know, created a dust devil at the bottom and like the deer ran off before you even like saw them, you know, all of a sudden you just saw a tail and you're like, well, where the fuck did that deer come? How'd my wind get over there? You know? So it's really easy to be like, oh, you know, I sat up here, I ran cameras all year and I knew it was going to work. And like, how many times did you sit there before that? And you saw nothing or like whatever, you know, it's just like, it's real easy to map it out when it works. You know, it's cool to explain to people, but at the same time, it's like, we all mess up so many times. And I think the guys that are just learning or the guys that are, you know, trying to get better or whatever, they forget about that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, right? Like we're screwing up constantly and I probably screw up more than most, but all of these guys, right, they are screwing up 90% of the time. And it appears as if they're extremely efficient. They're going in there. They know what they're doing. They kill the deer. That is not how it works. What you said about the 1 out of 1,000 going to 1 out of 100, going to 1 out of 50, you're talking about, you know, going down to what 1-2%? Like that, yes, that is reality. And so that's progress in the right direction. That's how I view everything. But there is a lot of screw ups in there. It's impossible not to do that. It's impossible.
So when you, I mean, understanding that these things are like completely unpredictable or whatever, but when you go to the hills, like where do you start? Like if you're looking at terrain features or whatever, and, you know, obviously you got your leeward sides and the wind and blah blah blah, but like what is it that you're focusing on? If you're like, okay, I'm in a new spot, here's some hills, what is it on the map that's like you're saying, okay, I'm gonna mark off these 3-4 terrain features?
So if you asked me this like 4 years ago or so, I would have just said, if I look for my leeward points for buck bedding, and then I just try and figure out how to get in there, right? Like that would have been it. What I've learned in the past 4 years since then is that it's way less consistent than that. And especially if you're hunting the hills during any phase of the rut. I mean, I would say anytime from October 20th, it's a game of finding does and finding the right does. And the tricky thing is that the does, those things are the most random creatures I've ever dealt with in my life. I mean, I've seen them bed in every scenario possible. I will say that if you have steep terrain and it's cold, and everybody said this, the south facing, they need to get some sun. They like those spots that get sun, and the bucks know that. So there is some concentration there. I can say that fairly confidently. I mean, you need some sun if you're in that later phase of the season to get does to bed there. So that's where I start, is finding deer. So it's not a mapping thing. It used to be a mapping thing, and I use maps to figure out where I want to look, like where I think I might be able to find a deer. But I usually end up finding deer where I didn't expect. So I don't have a great answer for that. But I would, you know, if it's cold, they got to get some sun. It's as simple as that.
So as you're going in and like doing your scouting or whatever, like as you're going to these areas and you're saying, okay, well, I just need to find deer. Like, is a physical deer the goal? Or are you paying attention to sign, you know,
yeah,
scrapes, tracks, rubs, all that stuff?
Tracks have been tricky, because I think it's, and this is just a skill level thing for me. I'm not a super tracker. Like, I couldn't age a track. Like, that kind of looks fresh, kind of looks old. I'm not really sure. What I like to see is I like to see a scrape with some shit and some piss in it. That's what I really like to see. Outside of physically seeing a deer, my number one thing I like to see is that scrape that's actually been hit like today, which that seems fairly obvious. Now, rubs have become more important to me this year than they have in the past. And I think it's just over time, right? You start to get a little better, and we're starting to play around with some bigger deer. And I'm starting to realize that those bigger deer are laying down some very strategic rubs. And one of those things that's helped out tremendously is just the traditional rut post rub. I mean, both of the deer we shot this year, and I shot a third deer that we didn't recover in Ohio last week, actually. All of those were based on rut post rubs. So,
and so what would you define as a rut post rub?
It seems random. Like those areas where you see a bunch of rubs, those can be good. So in Wisconsin, there was this ridge top. It had just, it's dead everywhere. But then all of a sudden you run into this area and it's just got like some, you can just tell that some deer was in there pissed off. Like, he was just having a temper tantrum. And I think that if you can time it right, when you find those rubs that are just a pissed off deer rub, you're good to go. But you got to time it right. I've hunted those areas and it's just been dead before because I haven't timed it right. Now, the rut post rub, I believe that the deer kind of move, the dominant buck will move into an area where there's a doe group, right? And he lays down this rut post rub, and that's his communication post for the area. It's his way of saying, this is my spot. And he's in there, and he marked it for a reason. And the ones that I'm referring to from this year were in doe bedding, basically, or right out of doe bedding, and he was bedded in there. Both of them we killed out of doe bedding, on the edge of doe bedding. And that's where those rut post rubs, I started calling it caution tape. You know, it's like, look, this is my zone. These are my chicks. Don't come in here. That's how it feels. I know that's a weird way to describe it, but that's how it feels when I see it in the woods. It's like caution tape. And so in both of those scenarios, we rattled, and that's, and it just, boom, because they thought somebody came inside the caution tape. So like, it's hard to explain without seeing it, because it's very subtle too. Like, they aren't these big, crazy rubs. They're just these, you can tell it's a bigger deer, and I don't know if it's a height thing, but it seems so calculated where they are. That's the best way I can describe it.
And is there, something that you heard one time, or anything, or is that just an observation that you've come across? Because I don't think I've ever heard that term. And I can think of some scenarios in both cases, like where, I can think of one where there was a spot where that was just completely decimated by this deer. Everything was like super fresh. Sat there. I think I saw 6 does. It was just transition area. And didn't see any bucks. And then when they were coming to pick me up, because I'd been dropped off there, just a monster buck came across right at dark, you know, after dark, and was coming right down in there. And it was just, like you said, like a timing thing. Like there was nighttime sign, like whatever. And then I can think of other times. I mean, hell, like I said, like when we were in Indiana, like right the day that I left, like going into that doe bedding, like where I knew the does were, I knew there was deer. I saw like 2 or 3 bucks that morning just off of doe bedding. But like right where I was at the day before, there wasn't any rubs, and there was a big scrape and this really tall rub right there. And it was like, what you're saying is like exactly the scenario. It was just, we had to leave, you know, that day, but that's the day that it turned on. So like, was that just strictly an observation, or did you hear that somewhere? Is that someone else's tactic?
So here's what happened. I used to hunt this spot in Michigan, right an hour away from my house in Southeast Michigan. And it's your typical Southern Michigan spot where you got, you know, 90% of the property is big time swamp. And then you have some higher like oak ridges. And then there's this one section of it that is just a bunch of standing pines. Like, it looks like a total dead zone. But the does always move through there every night. And so one year, this is a long time ago now. One year I found this rub randomly in this big standing pine. I mean, the standing pine thing is probably, it's at least 500 yards by 500 yards. It's a big set of pines. And I just randomly was walking this doe trail, and I found this one single random big ass rub, the biggest rub I've ever seen in that area. One of the biggest rubs I've ever found in Southern Michigan. It was one rub. At the end of the last week of October, like the 20th through the 27th or so, I sat that spot 3 times. And every single time I sat it, I had a buck come and rub that just after it got dark. I could hear him rubbing it. So I never got a shot at him. The following year, I went and sat in there. And it was right before a big thunderstorm, so we had this huge pressure drop. I felt like I was in danger with the storm rolling in, but it got that buck moving. And I'm sitting there totally silent. All of a sudden, I hear just this, like, you know, big, deep grunts going on. You can't hear any deer walking because of the pines. And I look over, and crossing this little sliver through the pines, going from one edge of the swamp to the other edge of the swamp, is this, the biggest deer I've ever seen in Michigan, on a doe, cutting that corner right through that rut post, crossing into the other swamp. And so, like, you know, I don't know what that proved, but ever since that happened, right, those 3 times I sat it in a row where he came and hit it, and then that encounter with that giant, I mean, I've always looked for those, and they're hard to find, which makes me believe that they're worth something, because they are hard to find. I don't think those big bucks, I don't think they're rubbing trees like crazy. And if they are, it's earlier in the season. This is just my opinion. But if you find one that's fresh later in the year, and you can feel it when it's one of these rubs I'm talking about, those are the ones that, like, you're in the zone. Like, that's a setup immediately situation for me. That's what happened in Ohio last week.
You're setting up right to shoot the rub. You're setting up like a natural rut movement, like downwind of the bedding. That's just telling you that you're in the right spot. And now you need to find the spot within the spot. Like,
most of the time they're on, this is my theory. I mean, most of the time I find them, they're on a trail. They're on a doe trail, you know, like it's a fairly beat down trail. And if you look at I'm thinking about the one in Ohio from last week, like, if you look at the topography in that situation and then the sign on the ground with just beat down trails, like, it's fairly obvious how they're moving through there. And then based on the wind, you can set up so that you're safe if movement happens.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
My thought on it is that, like, they mark that area and they kind of monitor that area. Like, they're sitting there because does are moving through there. They've marked it to tell the other bucks, this is my spot. I'm here. And they sit there and they're waiting for the right doe to come by. Cause they don't want to, those big bucks, I don't think they don't move around chasing does. Like, I've seen that for years now. Like, I don't think the biggest bucks are chasing does that hard. Now, in some of these competitive areas, right, they definitely are, but most of the areas we're in are just not like that, you know.
So that's something else, like, that I've noticed, like, from watching your videos, and I got to say, you guys are doing amazing things with the grit, both with, like, the production quality is great, but, like, being true to yourselves, like, showing, like, how far along Jake is on the spectrum and, like, your, you know, your drive and Jake and all that, like, you know, just this, the comedy that's in there, leaving the stuff, you know, that the frustrations and all the goofing around and all that stuff. But kind of showing everything that you guys are actually doing and going through, you're doing a great job there. But with that, like, your setups, one of the things that I've, like, noticed is that, like, it's funny, like Greg Lutzinger, right? He's like, I'm a terrible rut hunter. And I'm like, that's the only way that I, like, know how to hunt, just because it's like, I feel like I'm, you know, Billy Joe freaking overalls, like, just going out there, and I'm like, well, I know there's deer here, so there's a buck gonna move through here.
Yeah.
And I don't ever think about, like, kind of like what you just said, like, that those big bucks don't really move around like that or whatever. Like, I'm completely devoid of, like, buck bedding or, like, where a buck would be bedding, because I guess maybe, like, I'm just, like, that naive or, like, not smart enough to, like, look at it in terms of, like, that. I just think about, like, well, these bucks are, you know, running themselves ragged. They're not, like, bedding down, like, as we would typically think of it, you know, because everybody says that, well, bucks are just running, you know, for a month straight or whatever. So I, like, it's never once, like, entered my mind, like, from that window that you said, from Halloween to, you know, mid-November, like, our gun season, like, where, but Thanksgiving, that these bucks are bedded down unless they're bedded down with a doe. So, like, how does that play into, like, your thought process? Because you just said, okay, well, these are set up on, you know, movement areas, doe movement, and these bucks will be on there when the right doe comes by. Like, how does that buck bedding kind of play into the rut?
I don't know exactly how or why. This is just solely based on observation. This year, the deer I shot last week, he was alone, bedded on a point. He got up out of bed. He could have went one in two ways. He could have dropped down through the drainage, or he could have got up and went into the wind out to that rut post. We happened to be sitting on that rut post, and that's what he did. There was the biggest deer in Wisconsin that we saw. There was chasing going on. Like I said, I missed three. This sounds crazy. I missed three bucks that morning. And the biggest deer that we saw was not one of the one I missed. He was actually all alone, standing late morning, right next to a bed that was on the edge of this field. And all he did is he got up and he sent checked this field. And we saw him get back down and he laid down in bed. And that bed is it's almost impossible to hunt it, but he's in a bulletproof spot. But that bed is at the intersection point. And this is big, steep country. So like the deer movement is funneled. Like it really is. I mean, they can move up steep stuff, but like the majority of the movement is very funneled. And that bed is set up with a rut post rub right off of it, one single one, right at the intersection of the main ridge. And that's where every deer on this property works through there. And so this just adds to the theory, right? When I see this stuff is because we got bucks chasing the night before. You're not going to believe this, but I missed a deer the night before that too. And that was in a spot where we had all those rubs. It looked like somebody was pissed off in there. We climbed up a tree. I smacked the antlers together. It was one of the Black Friday ads. A really nice, you know, a mature buck came screaming in. I missed him too, of course. But that big buck was not involved in any of this. And I'm talking like you saw the buck from last year in Wisconsin, right? Like it was that caliber deer. He wasn't doing any of that. Like he wasn't even involved. And so those are the things that have just kind of changed my opinion on the rut, like with those really big deer. And even that deer in Nebraska, like he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't running around. This was November 4th or 5th we shot him. And you'll see this on video, but like he was just hanging out, monitoring his area. We got him on trail camera the night before. I hung a camera on this little licking branch that we found. And that night before, this big doe, one of the biggest does I've ever seen, I thought it might be a cow. I was like, what the hell is that? She came up and hit it. And then an hour and a half later, that buck came up to that scrape. So he's not like dogging her like you would envision, myself included. Like we kept asking ourselves over and over this year, like where is the rut happening? And so I think it depends on a lot of factors. Like in Kansas, you see a lot of that, or what, that's just an example. Cause I'm thinking of like Michael Waddell rattling and having bucks going nuts. Right. I just think there's a lot of variables. And most of the areas we're in, we don't have that super competitive atmosphere. It seems like, I mean, we spend a lot of time in the woods around a lot of deer. You'd think we'd run into it, you know, like, but who knows?
Yeah. Like they're I deer. Said,
they're wild animals.
Just watching the grit and like watching like your guys' approach. And then like even listening to like Aaron with the fall when they were in Kansas, they were like talking about like, oh, these bucks are going to be bedded over here and there's going to be does. And I was like, never once, like past October 25th, have I ever thought like this is where bucks are going to be bedded. And that's like probably super naive, but it's just like, I just feel like these deer are just going to be cruising. But I think maybe that's that whole like Michigan type mentality where you're only thinking in terms of like what you've seen with your own eyes, and until you, I don't know, like level up or you know make these observations like you've had here that it starts to click, right?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I was the same way until I saw it so many times. I'm like, this, I don't know. I think I might have been wrong. And the first time it happened was in Michigan. And well, there was that one scenario, but I had another scenario in Michigan in the swamp where I watched this. He was a gorgeous 10 point and he did not move. And I saw at least 8 does come in to that bedding area as if they were looking to see if it was their turn. Like, and there were bucks all over the place. There were subordinate bucks, smaller bucks that were going in, and they would get like 75 yards away from this deer. And they would like look around to see what's going on. Like, oh, is he in there? Like, is he busy? Like, you know, and they would just turn around and leave. And I'm like, what the fuck? So it's all, I don't know the answer, but it's just what I've seen. And I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, but it's something that you said earlier is that and this is, you know, I feel like a lot of times, like, especially like with our Patreon group and like all that, I mean, it's an incredible support system for like when you mess up or any of this stuff. But I feel like the guy that's like, you know, if you can, you do, but if you can't, you teach. And so like, I'm like the guy that's like Mr. Positive. I'm like, same thing. Like it only takes once, like, you know, you gotta mess up all these like million times. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if you're making these observations, then like it's not wrong, right? So it's like you have to be there to, it doesn't matter what anybody else says, you have to see it with your own eyes. Like when you see it, like, so what are you seeing and how are you breaking down that information, right? And like, so to me, that is like the main thing. Like it doesn't have to be like somebody else said it, like it's the way that the deer are used in the woods. Like,
you're touching on something that I actually think is extremely important. And well, two things is, first of all, you know, what works for someone else might not work for you. I don't know why, but I know that is real, because I see multiple people running different programs and it works every time for one of them and it works 0 times for another one of them. So I take what you want from that. I don't know what that means, but it might just not be for you. Like trail cameras for me, I suck at it. And the other thing is that like, if you're getting frustrated, and this is something that I've learned the hard way over time, because I used to be a very frustrated competitive hunter, is that like the failures are what make it so special when you finally kill something. Like that feeling, that high when you shoot that buck that's special to you, that wouldn't exist without that struggle. So like, you know, it's a win. Like it's the whole process is part of it. And you got to embrace it. Now, it's very difficult to do that. It's very easy to get frustrated.
Well, it's like we talked about like before, is that like what I felt like I got like kind of cheated in Kansas. And it's crazy to be like, oh, you know, I went there to shoot a deer and I did, and I'm super elated, but it's supposed to be really hard. Like it's supposed to suck. Like it's supposed to, like, you know, and I don't know why that's so hard to like wrap your head around. And, you know, one of the things that you had said earlier, previously too, is that, you know, what you learn from all of the travel and no sleep and everything is like that it's gotta be fun. Like, you know, you gotta keep it fun. So can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what you meant by that? Like,
I mean, you know, it's amazing we have these conversations about trying to kill deer, but you know, men are just men in general, and I say men just because it's a psychological thing, is that like we're wired to be obsessed with figuring things out. And when we aren't able to figure things out, we get really, really frustrated. That's deer hunting, right? Like, we're trying to figure out this thing and it sucks and we're tired. And I think that you have to at least for me, I have to constantly remind myself of what I'm doing. And it makes me think of what you said about Kansas, right? Like, you felt like you got, you didn't get the experience that you were looking for. Like, and that's what it's all about. That, you know, you feel that way because that's what this is all about. It's all about that experience, because there's really nothing else in life that can give you that feeling. When you struggle, when you work your ass off, you struggle and you finally shoot that big buck. Like, none of us are starving, right? Like, we love this. We love being a part of, you know, the natural world. Like, I'm very passionate about that, but at the same time, it shouldn't be as extreme as it is, but it is. And it's because it's all about the experience. And you got to remind yourself of that, because it's easy to lose sight of that. And you lose sight of it because of competition, competitiveness, social media. Like, it's so easy to fall into that, right? Like, I'll be scrolling and, you know, like, some tethered guy, I'll shoot a nice buck and I'll have a moment of being pissed, you know? And I'm like, why am I pissed? That's awesome. Like, you know, but it took me a long time to get to that point. Like, it's hard to turn that off and realize that this is all for you.
No. Well, I think it's like a reflection, right? Of like who you are. And you know, I've said it a lot of times, but you know, Frank's buddy Ernie, he told me one time, he said, you know, hunting is a jealous man's sport. And yeah, like, I've never forgot that, because I do not feel that way. Like, the buck that's real similar to this one that's in the other room, like, I shot that deer on a day that Ernie and I entered the swamp this way. We set Frank in a spot, and that's where he always hunted, and we walked and we got to the edge of this marsh, and one of us was going left and one of us was going right. And I said, Ernie, what way do you want to go? And he said, well, you know, whatever. And I said, well, I'll just go this way and go down here. And I killed that deer. And when, you know, Ernie and I like met back up, I told him, I was like, man, I'm sorry. Like, this could have been your deer, you know? Like, you know, it wasn't like a big pat on the back for me, where it was like, you know, the biggest deer that I've killed in Michigan, but it wasn't like, ah, look what I did. It was like, yeah, it was like, man, it could have been, you know, should have been yours. Like, my daughter killed that deer, you know, over the weekend, and, you know, her cousin had actually sat there, and her cousin had never killed a deer. And, you know, when we had hunted that spot in the morning, and because they didn't get up, you know, like you said, it's easy to not get up. They didn't get up, and we saw a deer there. So that next night, you know, I asked my daughter, I said, where are we going to hunt? She goes, well, we're going right back there. And I said, well, you know, that's not really how it works. You know, that was kind of like their spot. If they, you know, and they had messed up on a deer the night before, I said, if they want to hunt there, like, we'll let them hunt there. And then she ended up killing that deer. And then I felt really bad for my brother, cause I was like, well, she's never killed a deer either. And like, I just don't have that. Like, I think about it as like, I think hunting is like, from like your hippie side of it, is like a super introspective thing. And I think if you're doing it to like compare yourself to everybody else, then like, I don't know, some people get off on that, but I think for a lot of, like, for me, it's the challenge against myself. And like I said earlier, like, yeah, when you go in and it works, like, and you were right. And especially like when you go in blind and like, then you see a deer, or you see like a buck or something, there's nothing better. Like, whether you kill him or not, it's like, man, I was right. I was right. You know?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think the moment that your motivations as a hunter are to kill a bigger buck than someone else, or to be seen as a better hunter than someone else, that's when you've lost. You've lost sight of what this is all about. That's what I remind myself of. And as soon as I start to feel that, it's time to take a break or it's time to go home. Yeah.
So in that vein, because I wanted to ask you this earlier, I forgot. You're just flinging arrows at all of these deer. Like what's the Alex Chop criteria for an out of state deer? Because you're a very passionate guy, right? So I mean, it would seem like it wouldn't take very much for you to get jacked up when a deer's running by. And I mean, are you flinging arrows at just every 100-inch buck that runs by? Because you're jacked, or what's going on there? And why are you missing?
That's a good question. But so back to the first question, are you asking what's my size? What am I willing to shoot at?
Yeah, kind of. Because I mean, because you're oh, you'll never believe this, but I mean, so it sounds like in the span of 14 hours, you missed four bucks. And maybe killed the fifth one. So I mean,
Well, so I guess is your first question what are my standards?
Kind of, but I mean, what gets you excited? I guess.
Oh, a lot of different things get me excited. I mean, if the situation excites me, I'm shooting. It doesn't have to be a giant. I don't know if that answers your question. Why am I missing? That's a good question. I can tell you recently why I missed. So if I go to the range and I'm consistent at the distance thing, I'm comfortable shooting out to 50. So, and that's because when I go to the range, I can hit 10 out of 10 kill shots at 50. If I can go cold and shoot 10 out of 10 at 50, there's no reason I'm not going to take that shot. The problem is that when you get in the tree and you've got deer running around and you've got your hunting areas that you don't know, and you got deer coming from places that you never expected them to come. Cause again, I'm wrong a lot. And so that's where things get complicated. And then when you add a camera guy, a second guy in the tree, things get just screwed. The camera guy thing is really difficult. Someday I'm going to hunt alone again and it's going to be awesome. But, and that's not the only reason I'm missing, right? I didn't have a range. This one scenario we're talking about where I missed three times in 12 hours, that I didn't have a range on the deer because they're running in. And I'm a little sick with myself because of that, but because I'm a tree ranger. That's how I've spent my whole life. And it's you got so much going on and it's just, you're tired, right? And it's just, you're not paying attention. You're starting to get stressed. It's the whole physical mental strain thing, which isn't an excuse, but that's what happened. And the deer I missed, Adam, were at 15 yards and I shot over them because they were closer than I thought, it's just little things like that. It's very difficult to kill a deer. Like I said in the beginning, they never come to the right spot. Never.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good excuse. I just screwed up. I mean, that's part of it.
But I mean, so, and I'm not saying that because I'm being judgmental. I'm just saying
okay, you can be judgmental.
No, I mean, because I've said it I think I've had a whole podcast on it. For the hunting public and now, if you're putting yourself in this position enough times and you're shooting at all these deer, I can understand the guys who are haven't been in this position a lot. B, it's the first deer of the year and you're super jacked up and maybe you're a little rusty. So you're this is what it is. But then after you miss or you have that problem, you go and you say, well, don't fuck this up, instead of saying this deer is going to die, and you get in your own head. But it's I just didn't know if it was an equipment issue or something,
no, it's it's a the times that I missed this year were mental lapses where I the deer that we didn't recover in Ohio, right? I was sitting on my ass on the top of a pile of trash, and you know, and I felt really good about that shot. And I had time, I ranged them twice, like my entire process was as perfect as it could have been. But it's just, you have to have total muscle memory with your bow to be super, super consistent. And I will be the first to admit that I don't shoot my bow enough. I live in the middle of the city. And so when we get in these scenarios, which I'm in a lot, the way I hunt, like I'm in these weird, twisted scenarios, deer coming from places I would never expect, and these things happen. So it's not an excuse. It's just their mental lapses. Like not having the range on a deer is like is the dumbest thing ever. You know, I can't even believe I'm saying that that was part of the deal this year, but it just was. And, you know, it is what it is. I won't make the mistake again, I'll tell you that. But
yeah, I mean, you
know, it happened.
That deer that I, you know, that I killed in Kansas, like I didn't range him, but there was nothing to range. You know, I mean, the scenario, and that's exactly what I thought happened. Like when I, at first, when I missed that deer, like I'm Mr. Buck Fever. I'm Mr. Punch the Trigger, right? Like you get anchored, you get brown in the scope and you're like, oh yeah, here we go.
You know?
And like, I'm thinking like my pins were bouncing or whatever, but this was essentially elk hunting. I'm looking at a wide open cornfield, cut corn, where I have no idea. There's no landmark out there to think about like where this deer is walking in. And then when the deer clears the cedar, it's cedar tree, me, decoy, all in a line. Like there's no offset there.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out like, A, was I going to be able to get the full draw without him spooking? Cause that's what's going to happen in Michigan. B, how close is he going to get before he just charges this damn decoy and therefore me? And then when all of that meets, there's no way that I'm going to get to draw or he's not going to just run off because there was a man there and it's not a real deer. So by the time I got drawn, and he was still walking in. I was like, okay, I thought I settled it. Okay. And I shot. And then when I got the next arrow, I mean, that was like that 1 in 1,000 times. Well, you know, that deer didn't move, but in my head, I'm saying, you know, everything that John's ever told me in my whole life, like settle your pins, like make sure, you know, make a good shot, yeah. Like all of those things. And, you know, I've had people, you know, my buddies be like, I can't believe you were composed enough to make that shot. This, you know, the follow-up shot. And it's like, I guess if you miss enough or like you mess up, like punch the trigger, right? My brother was in South Dakota. He missed one at, he had just a bad range. He ranged him at 60 yeah. And he was at 53. And, but he said the next year he could have laid there for an hour. He snuck into like 40 yards on this deer or whatever. He could have laid there for an hour. And he said, for whatever reason, I just popped up, drew back and just punched the trigger and just set one right through his antlers. And like there's no reason that was like a mental lapse. And so I was just trying to figure out like, you know, from all of that, like to, you know, we, like you said, you know, we put on all these miles, we go all these things, we get up, we don't sleep, we put ourselves in all these positions, and then just to be like, how, you know, for and I think it's great for guys to hear, like, you know, they just see, you know, the Black Friday ad, the rattling, the deer running around, like all these deer running off and all the hero shots, you know. So I think it's good to hear, and I think it's good to hear like the breakdown of like how it goes off the rails, right?
Oh yeah. You'll see it go off the rails in the videos too. Cause like, you know, we're very passionate about showing what actually happens. And yeah, it's just, you know, like people miss all the time. That's the thing. Like you never see it on traditional hunting media, but they're all missing. They're all making bad shots, and you just don't see it. So if you miss something, just forget about it and move on. Like, yeah, there's no reason to dwell on that. Like, we had a couple misses in our group this year, you know, that look, move on. It's fine. Like, you're going to miss. You're shooting a bow at a moving animal. Like, it's hard, you know, it's not a big deal. So.
I love that perspective, the again, like the realness and like all of that. And like, there are so many people that would come on here and, you know, trying to like pump themselves up or like whatever their, you know, platform is to be like, oh, you know, we killed this many deer and we did all this stuff and all that's well and good, you know, but for the every man who's like, why can't I ever make it come together? Like all these guys, I absolutely love that. And I don't know if it was like in one of your like grit teasers or something, like where it's like you shoot and you turn around and you're like, I can't believe that just happened. Like,
it's like I say that almost every time I shoot. Yeah. It's always a shock. Yeah.
So, along with some of the other stuff, and we can get to wrapping this up, but one of the other questions, like, so we always ask like, what's the bow setup and all that stuff. And one of our listeners was like, I want to know his whole setup. Like what is he wearing for like thermals? Like what are his boots? Like what are all the stuff? And then what are some gaps that are out there? Like in the products that are available from the industry, you know, things that can be improved upon.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Okay, that's a big question.
We got insightful listeners.
Well... No, I like it. That's great. That's cool that you do that. So most importantly, you got to tuck your pants into your socks. That's key. Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
What kind of socks?
Doesn't matter. I just wear standard like cotton, like Dickies socks. That's what I wear. Like Walmart standard. I like a little thicker sock, but not too thick. I don't wear any insulated socks. I like the Sika stuff only because it fits me, because I'm skinny as hell. So it fits me, but I still get really cold. So if you're looking for something really warm, I don't know what to tell you there. I will tell you that. So when I walk in, I wear those Equinox pants. I have, I'm going to get shit for saying this, but I'll say it anyway. I wear Nike like military boots because they feel like tennis shoes, and I love them. And they discontinued them actually, so I had to buy some like secondhand. They might be knockoffs from China or something, but they just fit my feet so well. So Nike hunting boots that are actually the military tactical ones. And then so I'll walk in with those Equinox pants. And I wear an old fishing onesie thermal that it's the green thing you guys probably see me wear sometimes. You're probably like, what the hell is that? So I'll walk in with that and just a t-shirt. And then if it's cold, I wear these, I wear bibs. I love bibs. I like having just like my pants and my socks. I like everything tucked in and tight because I feel warmer. So I love bibs as my outermost layer. I'll even tuck my what's the warm heavy Sika coat?
Is it like the Calvin or Stratus or
the
I can't afford it, so it's not in my
I draw on a blank. Anyway, I'll even tuck that into my bibs. And so bibs are like a big deal for me, any bibs, but I love them. And then if it's really cold, like anything under 30, especially if I have wind, I do wear a down pant, and King's Camo makes the one that I have. I'll wear that under my bibs, over my Equinox pants. And I just, they zip all the way up so I can step into them. I have them preloaded in my bibs. And so I step into those. I don't zip up the down pants, but I zip up the bibs. And those down pants are like the best thing that I own. I absolutely love them. So if there's anything you take away from this, it's like, get some down pants. Up top, I mean, I wear sweatshirts, random crap. Like, I don't have a layering system, as you probably imagined, other than that one thermal thing. That's just an old fishing thermal. I don't even know what the material is. It's like Capoline or something like that. That seems to work well, but it does get a little hot, but it wicks moisture really well. I'm sure merino wool is probably the way to go. I've just never tried it. So, and then for my bow, I shoot that prime. Oh boy, they're going to be mad at me for not remembering what the model is. You'll know. What's the new prime bow?
Is it the brand new one that just came out?
No, the one last year.
Wasn't it like the Nexus or?
Anyway, the bow is really nice. Whatever the flagship bow was last year, it shoots. I was shooting that RX3 from Hoyt, which I love. I still love it. It feels like I'm shooting a race car or something. It's so harsh and fast. I still like it. But this thing, this prime bow is like, it's smooth. It's a whole different world. Really nice.
He likes shooting it so much, he shoots it at a lot of animals.
Yeah.
He wants to get as many.
You know,
that's his money's worth.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So that's the other thing. It's like switching bows is tough for me because I'm not a bow tech. So I hate doing it. I hate switching anything. But this was, it's a really, really nice bow. Very smooth. And the draw on it, I don't know the technical terms for you archery guys. But like the one thing I noticed being totally uneducated on archery is the draw. It is the smoothest, easiest bow I've ever drawn in my life. So whatever that means to you guys. But it is nice. I have that Spot Hog sight on it. I actually don't really like that. The only reason I don't like it is because we're putting it through a lot and that thing starts to wobble. Maybe that's my problem, but it gets a little loose over time. So I'm going to try one of the dialed sights. They just seem like absurdly robust. They're heavy, but they seem like they're rock solid. So I'm going to try that for next year, see how that goes.
Broadheads?
I shoot those Exodus 3 blades. So nothing special there, but those do seem to work okay. Although this is embarrassing, but I'll tell you anyway. So like that day that I missed those deer in the morning and then shot one, I was out at my broadhead. So I had to put on a old day 6 broadhead that I had. So I actually shot that deer with a day 6 broadhead. That did some serious damage. So that worked well too. But other than that, you know, all the gear I'm running, you know, sticks, platforms and stuff. So
are you running, I was going to ask you, are you running, which platform are you running? And then are you running a Ring of Steps along with it?
I run the X-Wing and I do not use a Ring of Steps. I don't see a need for it. Plus extra setup. I hate that. I think I don't want to do that.
I don't,
but there are some.
Go ahead. I'm waiting for your, that one stick thingamabob so I can have you just modify one for me. So I can just go back to my old setup. I've hunted off of a platform and I absolutely hate it. I hate it with like, cause I hate the setup. It always makes noise. Not the platform, like, but because I got another piece of metal to clink around and I want something on the top stick. And I got to tell you, I haven't told you this before. So during the Patreon hunt, maybe like the fifth time that I used the Latitude sticks. And, because of that, you know, whatever it is, Amsteel, Dyneema, whatever term that cordage is. I set like my second or third stick like too tight. Like I didn't set it, so it was like bouncy.
Yep.
And I got it caught in my, I think what ended up happening was my bridge caught it, like when I was like moving up. So that one kicked out. So it was just hanging there. So I ended up having to set up my platform, but I was on the bottom step of one of those sticks on my knees, fumbling around to get everything set up, and basically one stick down and got it set up. But, and it was in a legitimate 100% downpour, at that point. And, this, I was telling Tim Clark, I was like, I put this stick through something it was never, ever, ever designed for, to have a 225 pound man on his knees on the stick in a downpour. Like people are like, well, how do you like them? Like, well, I absolutely love them. And they do things that they take the abuse that I'm going to give it.
Adam, I don't want to hear about this, honestly. God. Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad that worked out okay. The ring of steps, there are advantages to them. Like if you're somebody who, I don't know, if you're somebody who's really particular about your, and maybe I should be more particular about this based on my track record, but if you're really particular about your shooting stance, like I could see where a ring of steps would be beneficial, you know?
Well, I was just reading something the other day and it was somebody who had said that they had like gone back and forth with you about adding a ring of steps to their platform. And it was like about a weak side shot. And I was like, I never really, that to me has been like, I don't want to say like problematic, it seems like, just like you said, like the deer always come from like where you didn't think they were gonna, and then you're dealing with that weak side shot. And like, I don't ever think about like that, you know, whatever, like the John Eberhardt style of, you know, wandering, you know, walking around the tree, like either to get out of the deer's sight. I mean, everybody leans out of the way, you know, and does that. But as far as like making those weak side shots, like with adding a ring of steps, and you guys have that, you know, built in strap holder or whatever into the upright there. So I just didn't know if that was, something that you, I mean, I know that that's like probably Kevin's baby, but at the same time,
Kev, he likes a ring of steps, but 100% like that backside shot can be made easier on a bigger tree if you have a ring of steps. I try to avoid bigger trees, you know, this big, and, you know, probably anything over 20 inches in diameter, I'm trying to avoid. The other thing that's different about me is that I usually go up and over my bridge to take my backside shot. I'm usually not shooting around the tree. Mainly now, cause I, you know, I'd be shooting D-Rock, you know, because he's over there. But yeah, even when I didn't have that, even when I didn't have another guy in the tree with me, I would still go up and over, just because sometimes I'm lucky enough to set up where the deer are coming on the opposite side of the tree. So like if I move over there, I'm on the same side of the tree as them. So I don't know. It's definitely a personal preference thing for sure.
And then, so the second part of that question is like, what gaps do you see? Like where can, you know, some of the products or some of the things like be improved upon?
Bino harnesses. I hate them. So
dude, I love the bino harness, and I have the Alaskan Guide Creations. I've used a whole bunch of them, and that one has the two pieces of elastic on the top. And so John's got me into like, that's where you put your phone. So like, you know, you're doing all your stuff, you check your maps, you're looking at all your stuff, and you put it right back there. You know where it's at. It's secured. Climbing with it in the saddle, like
that's what I'm
every other time. I hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. And I don't know like how to get around it, because that's where, and this is all my fault and it's very easily solvable, but that's where I have all my licenses. So it's like, I have to bring it with me every single time. I've got my release in there. So it's like, if I don't bring my, because I did it last year, I'm not bringing the vinyl harness, get all the way up in the tree, get set up like right where I needed to be, everything, you know, 45 minutes, an hour before daylight. And then I'm like, I don't have my release. So then I had to climb around the tree, run back to the truck. Like, oh my God, you know, I was screwed.
Yeah. The vinyl harness, like as soon as you leave the ground is just, it's terrible. And so if I have any say in the matter, we're going to figure out a solution for that. But I'll tell you what, usually I'll be sitting out there and I can come up with some crazy idea that Jake and Kev will probably tell me won't actually work. But I can't really even come up with something for this. You know, it's a weird piece of gear, and it's important because I have become a believer in having your optics out there when you're hunting, especially scouting around. Like that's been important to me, especially this year. So the vinyl harness could be improved for sure. And outside of that, I think you could do a really cool, like access to water, like access to a water bottle. Like for some reason that's annoying to me in the tree. But I'm not that picky with gear. I'm really not. Like I like my bow. I like my release. Obviously I'm a little biased to the climbing stuff and the saddle. My clothes, like I don't really care. So like that seems okay to me. I don't know. I'm pretty happy overall. So.
Well, I got 100% agree with you. And like that, one of the things is I was like earlier in the season, I was like, well, I'll just hang my binos over here. Well, I found myself in a position where, you know, I'm glassing.
Yeah.
And then there's a deer right there. I don't have my vinyl harness on. So I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with these binoculars? Yeah. You know? So then I'm trying to like move.
It's constantly like, to me.
It's like,
it's the worst. It's a nightmare.
And I know the listeners are going to say like, there's like that, I forget the guy's name. It's like Rick something, where it's just kind of like a paracord type harness that just holds them right here. It's a very minimalist one. And like, I've used like the Vortex one, like that you see on like the Hunting Public. That's just like the elastic one, but your binos way too much for the elastic that's in it. So they end up down like around your waist and like they're bouncing around when you're walking around. Like that's not good enough. So maybe I need to try that. Like, I forget what the guy's name is. I'll remember.
It's I'll have to try that too. It's just like, what you just hit on it though, like, cause the vinyl harness is extremely nice when you're moving around. And then when you get in the tree, all hell breaks loose. So I don't know. I'll have to play around with some things on that. So rattling antlers too. Like those things are a pain in the butt. One of the deer I met, I was rattling, that deer came in, I talked about earlier. I didn't even have time to put my ant, and this is like, I should have had somewhere to put it, but still they're going to make noise. And I'm a big advocate for using real antlers. So I like ended up putting them in between my legs, and I had a backside shot with D-Rock on this side of me. So I had to shoot behind his ass. So he's like ducking out of the way and my antlers are in between my legs. It's a total shit show, you know? And so you got to figure out some storage for rattle antlers too, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's what kind of sounds like cost Aaron a deer in Kansas was going over his bridge.
Oh, and I think it hit the
rattling antlers and locked up the deer. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I haven't been in too many situations where I've rattled. Like I rattled in some does in Kansas while I was there. And then, you know, my daughter was cracking them together all weekend. And that's about the extent of the rattling that I've ever done. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, you should smack those things together more. They seem to work. It's funny you say that about the doe. I had a doe one night, D-Rock and I got real desperate in Indiana one night. I'm like, dude, let's just walk around. try and sound like some bucks intruding the area or something. See what happens. Threw on the face paint, got all pumped up, and we're down there like doing all this shit. You guys are gonna just laugh so hard when you watch this because I look like an idiot. But you know, of course, this doe comes screaming down to this, and behind on the doe is a buck. So we like called in a doe, which dragged a buck in. So it was just weird. And on that same trip, I saw there were two bucks and some does, and this doe actually chased another doe off the buck. So I thought that was really interesting. I've never seen that before, a protective doe like that. But it makes sense, I guess. But
I had a buck like run past me in Kansas, and then I saw him over there like working a scrape, and then another buck came through, and then there was another buck coming out, and they were like kind of like bristled up like side to side, and these were just little bucks, you know. And then they did whatever they were going to do and parted ways, and one went this way and one went the other way. So then I was like, well, what happens if I rattle? And I rattled, hang up the antlers, and I look, and three doe come running down the hill, like right to there. And I was like, well, that's not what I expected.
You know? Yeah, there's something. Hey, Adam, I think we're on to something there. Start rattling in the does.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap this up, like what can everybody expect, like from Latitude and from you guys with the grit and all that stuff? And then like what, you know, what do you have in store for the year coming up?
So, you know, grit, you can kind of expect, we'll show the whole season. Well, it'll be real. Probably going to, you know, there might be some people that hate me after it, and there might be some people that like me. We'll see what happens. But so that'll be grit. That'll be interesting. As far as Latitude goes, we have some really cool stuff in the works. Some stuff I can't talk about because it involves some collaboration with others. But it is very exciting, and you'll see the majority of it at ATA. So it'll be launched next year. I think there's 5-7 products, we'll say, in that range. We'll see which ones end up making it to the finish line. But we are very excited about that, along with some new team members that will be joining us. So we got some cool stuff going on, and that'll all be kind of announced and shown at ATA this year.
Awesome. And so where can everybody follow along, keep up to date, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, the best communication is done on, you know, Instagram and Facebook. We did add like text messaging communications, and that's where we send out some special pricing or special event information through that. But the best thing to do is just Instagram and Facebook, and then Grits on YouTube. So if you want to follow along on that, just subscribe and you'll get all that. You'll get all that served to you, as I'm sure you want. So all the standard stuff.
Well, awesome. We appreciate the conversation, and good catching up again. So,
yeah, thanks a lot, Adam.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.